to the AI and Data-Driven Leadership Podcast, the show where we spotlight the innovators and leaders who are transforming the future using the power of data and AI. I'm your host, Dean Gaeta, author, podcaster, and founder and CEO of Infogistics and Slingshot. We're living in an exciting era, a time where builders, leaders, and entrepreneurs are using data and AI to fuel unprecedented growth, create groundbreaking products, and drive meaningful transformations in their industry. If you're ready to learn from some of the brightest minds and uncover actionable insight to take your business to the next level, you're in the right place. And if you have a story to share, stick around until the end of the show. We'll tell you how you can become our next guest and inspire leaders around the globe. Welcome to the AI Data-Driven Leadership Podcast. Let's dive in. Hey, good evening, good morning, good afternoon. Welcome. I'm really excited to have Elvin Agamantaza, and I know I pronounced his name wrong. I am so sorry, but AI architect over at NVIDIA and done some really cool work. He was like a leader on the competition at Kaggle. And anyways, Elvin, welcome to the show, and maybe do a better job introducing yourself than I did.
Thanks for having me. I'm Elvin. I'm at part of DataRobot and NVIDIA. We are building agentic AI platform. Prior to NVIDIA, I've been all around building stuff in the AI space mostly. After 9 to 5, I typically work with students and college students here in Boston to try to see almost like other side of the coin where they want to look for advices and being a mentor to them about where the future is going to be regarding AI. But it's been mostly trying to balance between these two, trying to actually design agentic systems and AI and software, but as well as trying to mentor people in terms of preparation to the industry.
Yeah, that's excellent. So I'm curious, like in your journey a little bit, like what inspired you to focus on AI, computer vision early on, and how that lead you to roles like spanning research, competition at Kaggle, and enterprise level AI work at NVIDIA?
I feel like AI is almost like an electricity. It has a huge impact on every single pieces of the industry as well as every single person's life. Let's just look at how many people is using ChatGPT daily. They are closing to 1 billion mark. That means every, seven or eight people is using it, right? So that means that it has a significant impact on people's daily lives. So I feel like this is one of those industries to be in if you want to have impact in people's lives, and especially positive impact. So that's part of the reason why I chose AI under computer science. But if you ask why computer science, then that goes back in time to my college years when I was a little bit interested in math and trying to measure numbers or look at numbers and then see the magic in them. So I feel like there is a lot of truth or wisdom to the math in terms of understanding the world and understanding what's the meaning of life. So I feel like it helps me to understand and find answers to my internal deeper questions. So that was part of the reason why I chose computer science as my major. Regarding competitions, I mean, whoever listens here is a student or young, I feel like competitions helps you to challenge yourself in terms of going out there and finding out what is unsolved in this world, in terms of computer science, in terms of AI, whatever, and then try to solve those. A lot of times in research, it takes 6 months or 1 year for you to work on an algorithm, then go review process and then publish that. But on competitions, if you have a really unique idea, then you can be equally impactful and then, let's say, win a first place and then be published somewhere. So it's another option for you if you want to explore innovative solutions, basically.
Yeah, that's interesting. So like in your view, like what's possible with AI? Like how has it evolved from early research days to like working on industrial scale enterprise solutions?
Yeah, in the initial years, maybe I feel like the first most significant phase was 2012 when Ilya Sutskever used two GPUs to win a competition, actually, with Geoffrey Hinton. He's called Godfather in AI. Should probably look him up. But yeah, that's probably the first significant phase when people realize that AI has a huge potential, But at that time, AI wasn't generating any value. It was mostly experimental in research labs, and people were trying to find out where it might potentially bring some value. And then a couple of years passed, and then we've seen a really good model from Google DeepMind. I think it was 2016, where they beat the grandmaster player in Go, which is a significantly harder play than chess. So they was able to develop a model called AlphaGo, and then they beat the couple times world champion, who was Korean, if I'm not mistaken, called Lee Sedol. And then there's also a really nice documentary on YouTube regarding that. So that was another, like, probably second kind of punch in terms of headlines saying that, oh, AI can really do something here, like more than being a computer player in chess. So that was another significant point. Then 2016 and 17 came, where the attention paper from Google released. Attention is the backbone of today's ChatGPT. To explain it intuitively, attention is an idea of almost putting an attention into a specific pieces of a text and then answering you based off of that. For example, ChatGPT knows about all of the internet, right? But then how does it know what you're asking for and then find that specific context or information that you're looking for? But that's basically what almost attention is, trying to learn or put what attention and how much attention to which pieces of the word and sentences, paragraphs and text. So that was another grounding, probably a significant step.
Like, how does that work?
Attention, I would explain how does ChatGPT work. I can explain it simply with a term called autoregressive models. Autoregressive models are models that predict each next token or next word each time. So whenever you are trying to chat with ChatGPT and say hi, then the next word should be hi there, probably, right? So it tries to compute the probability of next word each time you are trying to ask for something. So if you are trying to ask what is the capital of France, and then the next word should be Paris, and that's probably the highest probable word out of all the possible combination of other words. So the whole process is happening so fast that you don't really feel each word latency, that, oh, it predicts each word after each word. But it's typically in sub-second, millisecond level latency, so that you don't really realize that, oh, it's really thought. But yeah, that's basically how it works. It tries to predict the next word based off of everything it knows about the internet. So it's been trained about all Reddit threads or all the open internet that's accessible on Google search or on YouTube videos, transcriptions, and basically books that are publicly available.
It's like mind-boggling that it's just a prediction engine, but yet it like seems so smart, and it seems to like, how do you say, oh, it's reasoning, it's thinking? Like, how do you describe that from an algorithm point of view? Is it really reasoning? Is it really thinking? And does it understand these things? And
Yeah, that's a really almost really controversial topic regarding the research, because right now the research is split into two regarding that. Some people, for example, Yann LeCun from Meta, and he's also got a Nobel Prize last year, says that no, these models aren't really reasoning. It's an illusion of reasoning. The real reasoning models will be the ones who have a world models. Right now, ChatGPT only knows about text or image, but it doesn't know about world and how to interact with it. And it doesn't have a 3D structure of what happens when you drop a pen. But it probably knows because it read it from a book. But it doesn't have an experience of what happens when you drop some water from your cup to the floor. It probably knows it because it's read some physics books, and then it's been written there that it's basically remembering. So there was an interesting paper called Stochastic Parrots. The LLMs are stochastic parrots, meaning that LLMs are just repeating whatever it is seen on the book, but it doesn't really reason or know. But I'm more probably on the middle, towards the left side or right side, whatever you call it, that I almost feel like they reason. Because a lot of times when you ask a really difficult or a question that requires reasoning, for example, explain why this joke is funny. then it will explain it for you, and then it will give a background context and then even try to make you laugh or something like that. So I feel like that's the way we reason as well, right? We try to think a little bit and look back into what we know in life, to our experiences that's in our memory, and then try to put attention to a specific piece and then predict the next word that we will say. A lot of things are almost similar to the way humans reason. But obviously there is a lot more complexity to it. I don't know if we should talk about those, but for example, all ChatGPT and all these models are using a lot of electricity and GPU. Our brain doesn't use that much. Our brain is working on probably on, I don't know, like 1 watt, where like it's not using a lot of energy. But right now, for if you want to chat with ChatGPT, it's probably using a couple liters of water to just the freeze or cold and the GPUs that it's using in the background. So there is something that's fundamentally wrong in the way that we are doing this, because the human brains are much more optimized. It's almost like another level of magnitude better than current models. So yeah, there is differences, but I'm more on the side of believing that it can at least a little bit be able to reason.
So I want to come back to that question. I'm wondering what breakthroughs or algorithms will help improve efficiency. But before I do that, so when it knows to give a joke about a joke or interpret that, is that software or is that like the probability and the predictions in the model? Like what's giving it that additional charisma or characteristic, or what's that? How's that done?
Yeah, that's a good question. So that comes to a next breakthrough, which we were left of a 2017 attention paper. Then after that, I think it was 2021 or 22, there was something called chain of thought. So chain of thought is basically prompting the LLM or those models in the background without showing the user a couple times before it answers, basically. So it's breaking down the problem into a couple sub prompts or sub problems, and then trying to solve those before actually solving the bigger problem. So let's say if you want to solve that, like why this joke is funny problem, then you break it down into five pieces. So LLM doesn't really handle that question. So now it handles, what is the joke actually? Is there anything funny about this? Or like a couple more questions like this, and then it handles all of them, which are simpler to answer, and then combines them in one final context. And then LLM looks at that to answer your question, basically. So that creates an illusion of reasoning where it tries to think. So what that thinking really means, like when you ask a question to ChatGPT and it says thinking, it basically does this chain of thought thing where it questions itself. Like, how can I break this down into subproblems so that I can compute or find out the answer to each one of those?
And is that probabilistic? The chain of thought, like trying to figure out, okay, what's the right prompts and questions to break this down into a chain of thought? Is that, I'm assuming that's all probabilistic too, right?
Exactly. Yeah, that's all still autoregressive as well. So it tries to predict what questions it can do, or for each question, which words it should use, and then how long should it be, and then things like that. There is typically different modes where you can play with it, like high thinking mode, medium, low, where you can play with the nodes of how deep it thinks or how different it thinks in terms of variations and things like that. For example, there is a parameter called temperature, where if you increase the temperature, it will try to like find really creative directions, and then sometimes they are so meaningless as well. So it's a trade-off between being creative and being meaningless. So there is that as well. But there is also different knobs to play with it and then create a new character. So that's the way how different companies differentiate themselves, like Anthropic or OpenAI or Google. Basically, fundamentally, they are all using the same data set, the open internet. But then there should be something different in it that they bring their recipe, basically.
So like this open internet, is there like just some big database out there that's already cleaned up and people use that for the base training? Is that what it is?
Yes, there is an open internet data set that exists, but that's only a small part of what the really big providers build their models on top. So they typically hire actual human contractors to find out those really niche data sets or data points that they can leverage to get better at. For example, let's say there is a particular branch in physics, let's say in quantum physics, that ChatGPT doesn't do well. So they hire those PhD people who can actually collect some data and then annotate that data to be ready for training process, basically.
And how come we're only like at 70 to 80% accuracy? And then if you ask the same question multiple times, you're going to get different answers. Like, I mean, AI is smart, but it's not smart enough. And that maybe gets into agentic. But like, how much, like, why 70, 80%? Why aren't we breaking through that?
I feel like we're improving every single year at least 5 to 10 times in terms of the quality of the responses against different benchmarks. So there is, for example, there is the Last Exam of Humanity data set. This is like a set of really difficult questions that LLMs were doing, I don't know, 40% last year, but this year it's 60 or more. So it's every single year we're getting at least 2, 3, 5x times better models. And to your second question regarding why are we not getting the same responses each time, as I said, they are stochastic, they are not deterministic. So each time when you compute the probability of next word, it tries to compute that, but it computes it each time and then finds out a different word for next. So let's say when you say hi there, when you say hi, it says that there is 80% of probability that the next word should be there. But at some, maybe tomorrow, it will be hi, Dean, and the word Dean will have 81% probability. So tomorrow it will be hi, Dean, but today it's hi there. So it's just that the fact that it's stochastic, it just computes everything all the time, again and again.
So are they like choosing what areas of data or knowledge to improve and improve? And then that's how different areas are getting smarter and smarter at different percentages.
Yeah, that's part of the effort. Another part of our effort is actually being better at reasoning, being better at solving problems or breaking the problems better into as sub problems. So that's also one thing. But another one is what you said exactly, like being able to think about a problem for 1 hour, for 10 hours, for 10 days, nonstop, and being able to not lose the track and then still be able to solve the problem. So that's one thing that kind of brings all those models closer to humans, I think, which is being able to compute or think or reason over a problem for more than a minute, for more than a day. So right now, we realize that when you give more time to ChatGPT to think, it gets better in terms of solving it. That's basically what we call reasoning, right? If you give more time to LLM to think, basically to chain of thought, there is more to it than chain of thought, but to do chain of thought, then it will be able to solve bigger problems. So that's basically what they are working on to be able to better reasoners. That's one of the efforts, but another one of the efforts is being able to agentically solve problems. So for example, if you don't know the answer, go do a Google search. Or if you don't know the answer, then go use calculator. Like, why would you use an LLM to compute 100 times, 75 times, 33? It's better for you to use calculator, right? Then that's where the agentic side of things come in, where you don't let the LLM to do really the compute heavy stuff or that stuff that's already in a source that you can quickly find or LLM can quickly find without predicting the next word. Then you should just do that. And I feel like that's where the future is in terms of designing systems in more agentic ways so that more skills or capabilities are coming from those tools rather than the LLM itself being able to remember stuff. Because hallucination is also an issue where LLM confidently tries to make up stuff in the middle of a 100-page document that you wouldn't even realize. So it's better to not let LLM handle all sort of complexity, but better to hand off all those problems to tools which can give you a precise response.
Now, what's the mechanics of that? Is that a RAG database, or is that probabilistic too? Like, when does it know to call out to different APIs or software or tools?
Yeah, those are mostly intent-driven, where if you're asking for a specific calculation, LLM knows that this is something about using calculator tool, then it decides to call that tool. So you can either make it intent-driven, where you decide, for example, in enterprise use cases, if there is a specific keyword or if a user is asking for a specific customer report or a prediction or something like that, then we can encode this inside the code to force it to call that tool. Or you can let the LLM to handle it. If it sees that request from the user, then it will always call that tool, basically.
Yeah, and then maybe going back to an earlier question, like, where's the big breakthrough to reduce the power consumption? Is it algorithms? Is it like, what are your thoughts or the industry thoughts?
Yeah, so there is typically three pillars of building all these models. Those are the algorithms, data, and compute. So algorithms are basically the code that they write to make it better at reasonings, right? Then the second one is data, which is which data is clean. Maybe the Twitter data isn't really good. Maybe you should use Reddit, or we shouldn't use Reddit right away. We should clean up some data, which is nonsense. Then we need to make it created basically to make it a little bit higher quality. There is, by the way, right now all of these models are almost data bound. Like, data limits us, because at one point, maybe after a year or two, we will be limited by the amount of data that exists on the internet, because we have already trained all models until now with all the data that exists on the internet. So what else is there now?
What
So
about corporate data? Just unlocking all this data that's private.
exactly. That's no one would give that to you, right? Probably not. Only
Not
like,
for general purpose, but they would want
yeah,
it.
exactly. That's the value that some big companies use. And the last piece is compute, right? The compute is the amount of GPUs that you have access to, which is part of the reason why NVIDIA stocks are exploding. So right now we're not compute bound, we're not probably algorithms bound, but we're mostly data bound, where that we should be able to find a way to maybe synthetically, or maybe find another way to generate more high value data. Because at one point, it's so hard to add value if you already learned about the whole internet, right? Then it's hard to find out that basically really high value data that brings quality to your model.
So, like robots and everything, and these LLMs generating telemetry data to train these robots to get them better, faster than what we've seen in the past. What are your thoughts around that?
Regarding robots, I feel, yeah, robots hasn't still lived their ChatGPT moment. It will probably come in the next 1 or 2 years, I believe. But I feel like that's one of the spaces that excites everyone, where the robots will be able to be like cars. For example, Elon is saying that robots or humanoid robots will be even everyone will want to have one, or at least one on their household, just like cars or just like phones. So I feel like that's probably one of the biggest product markets that will exist. And for robots to make them better, we need more world data, basically, which is scarce if you want. Like, there isn't a lot of videos about how to hold a cup or how to drink a coffee, right? Then, but there is a lot of like text about how to like make a coffee or how to drink it. So it's, again, data bound. That's part of the reason why
That's the
nobody.
biggest problem, is there's just not enough. Is there, can't we synthetically generate the data to teach physical movement and physical interactions?
Yes, that's one way, but not all the time synthetic data is really nice, because it's not experimentable. Like, you cannot interact with it, right? It's
All
just
right.
data.
It's fit, yes.
Then you need a 3D environment where the robots can go in and then actually drink their coffee, and then find out that, oh, if you hold this way, it will spill. You should hold it this way so that it won't spill. And then again, on that scenario, it's still not real. It's inside your environment, 3D environment, which is not still matching the real environment, which is slightly different. So there is a lot of complexity there that we need to solve on the data
Yeah,
side.
that seems like deterministic training too, instead of probabilistic training. I don't know. Shoot, we're coming up on, I'm gonna have your time here. Like, what question didn't I ask that you want to share with the audience?
Yeah, maybe one quick thing would be about the opportunity of this whole AI technology that brings to the new generation. I feel like that's one thing that I want to emphasize a little bit. Probably in the past, if you would go 10, 20 or more years to the past, it's really hard for someone to code, develop, or bring something to the market as a new startup. But right now, all those new college students or almost everyone who want to pursue a new idea, a new field, new anything new, they have a huge opportunity to quickly develop, to quickly be an expert in a specific field and quickly go to market and then build stuff basically. I want everyone to be on top of the fact that AI is like electricity, which expands everyone, empowers everyone to 10x, 100x. So that means that whatever you have as an idea that you want to realize, you can quickly do that in even a couple hours today in these days. I see some pessimistic opinions from some folks or even students that AI is going to take over or take over some jobs or things like that. But I would probably encourage people to look at it from the positive perspective of empowering you, making you more creative or making ideas more easily attainable or achievable. So that's one thing that new generation folks or college students even can be motivated about, that they have this huge opportunity in front of them that they need to utilize rather than being pessimistic or demotivated about.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, it's a great team player and helper. I don't know what your point of view is there, but it's a great team player and helper, but it's not the whole team and the AI.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not by default, but it's by design that all AIs should be co-pilots rather than taking over. Like, for example, the humans should be the last decision makers, but AI is a tool.
But
AI
that's because
doesn't.
we're at 70, 80%. Like when it gets higher accuracy, then it could do more. But I don't know, what's your point of view there? Like it's because of the same 70, 80% accuracy that you need it to be a contributor but not own something. I don't know, what's your point of view?
Yes, that's true to some level. No one really knows what will happen in the long term, but at least in the short term, we are all trying to design these systems in a sense that the AI is a co-pilot, not the main driver, basically. But
Because of
maybe,
accuracy.
yes, but maybe in future, the greediness or whatever the reason will let people to just pour over the complete autonomy to everything. Then I don't know what will happen. Maybe something like universal basic income will come into play where the working will be optional so that you don't have to work. But if you want, you can, alongside robots or humanoid robots, basically. But again, I imagine that future not techno futuristic where everything is metal robotics, but I can imagine a future where anyone else from outside of the world would come into our Earth and would still see nature, would still see humans or children happy. So I hope that's a feature that will go. But again, it's so hard to predict long term.
Yeah, and we need critical thinkers. We need engineers. We need computer science. We need anyone in the sciences to like help shape the future. I'm with you. There's so much opportunity, and some of the words out there are making people feel like there's limited opportunity, but no, there's a big need for human ingenuity and learning how to be system thinker and creative. And yeah, I don't see us getting too close to that yet. Not even close.
100%, yes. Each new technology creates new challenges for everyone, as well as lowers the barriers for the new entrants. So, for example, right now, everything is intent driven. If you want to be a physicist, you can quickly learn about that stuff probably in less than a year. Whereas 10 years ago, it would take for you probably 20 years of going to library or trying to research something on encyclopedia to find a wisdom. So there is a really lower barrier to entry each one of the new sciences that you want to use AI
Awesome.
for. That kind of empowers you to go find new ways of thinking about things because we need new ideas. Maybe this thing is also helpful. There is a saying in California or Silicon Valley that ideas are cheap, but execution is hard. But it's almost vice versa now. ideas are scarce. Like, we need more unique ideas, but execution is everyone has compute, everyone has money to pour into ideas now. So it's just that we need more unique, different, out-of-the-box perspectives, and that will come from people who are not necessarily spent 50 years of their lives coding. Maybe it will come from someone who has done physics 20 years, or I don't know, some creative field 10 years, then it will be him who will bring new perspectives. So it's just that we need new ideas.
Yeah. Elvin, this has been a really good conversation. Thank you for sharing your perspective and knowledge here. If people want to reach out to you, how can they do that?
I'm typically active on LinkedIn, happy to connect with anyone to chat more.
Awesome. Thanks for sharing. I really appreciate it. I think our audience is going to really enjoy this version of the podcast. Thank you.
Dean, it's been a pleasure to connect with you. Thank you so much for your time today.
Hey, it's Dean Guida here. Thank you so much for tuning in to the AI Data-Driven Leadership Podcast, where we showcase the visionaries who are shaping the future with data and AI. If you're a successful leader, entrepreneur, or business professional and want to share your story on this program, we'd love to hear from you. Visit us at podcast.slingshotapp.io to apply. Got something value out of this interview? Share the love. Take a quick screenshot, post it to your favorite social platform, or text it to a friend. Don't forget to tag the show and use the hashtag AI Data Driven Leadership. I love seeing your posts and suggestions for future guests. And if you know someone who would make a great guest, let them know about the show. We're dropping new episodes regularly, so don't miss out. Hit subscribe wherever you listen, and if you enjoyed this episode, a quick thumbs up, rating, or review would mean the world to me and my team. Want to stay connected? Visit our website at podcast.slingshotapp.io or find me on LinkedIn at Dean Guida and Instagram at DeanGuida89. Thanks again for listening to the AI Data-Driven Leadership Podcast. We'll see you next time.